Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, Morrison, then you are on the right night. Please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow as the After Midnight Bomber. Then delve into a world of strange magic with Indigo Hair and Dust and Victoria Frost. Friday, I split between Crawling into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, learn the fine art of being part sinner, part saint with Ephesiana and Babbler. And Monday, join Victoria Frost and Versus Goliath as they bring you the heart of LNT. These shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host, Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. How's it going?
All righty.
Awesome sauce. Well, you know, the nice thing about this show tonight, it's like a buffet. It's like one of those potlucks. You just come on in and there's a variety to choose from. We've got carryovers from After Midnight. We've got carryovers from Into the Darkness. And we've got carryovers from The Art of Seduction. So, definitely. Yeah, a nice variety, I tell you. Today was a really nice day as far as weather goes. Not during the daytime, but in the evening, I got a chance to just sit outside and relax after the boy was asleep. And it was just one of those, like, perfect summer nights. So.
Well, I might have that now since it rained earlier. It rained real good.
Oh, nice, nice. You know, yeah.
Yep, all the crickets and tree frogs were out singing.
Oh, nice, nice. I saw this thing that said, things to do in South Carolina, and I think, you know, and it. And it had a list of things like sweat profusely, swat giant mosquitoes.
No, that's Florida.
Like, is that? Okay. Well, it said Carolinas, but Florida is one of those places, I'll be honest. If I had a bucket list, it would be on my bucket list to visit it, just to say I've been there and I visited it. But then again, the whole East Coast is my bucket list. Like, I just really always wanted to travel from Maine to Florida and stop at a lot of the really old towns and cities. But it's never a place that I could picture myself living. It just, too many big, scary things there, you know. I'm used to small animals like bears and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're smaller than mosquitoes and love bugs and cucarachas and palmettos.
Oh, my gosh. We had those in Texas, those giant, like, they look like cockroaches, and they're just horrifying. But
they make good snack
right.
food.
What's that?
They make good snack food.
Oh, yeah. You just open your mouth and let them fly in. Crunch, crunch, crunch. Do they actually?
If you can get past the first squeeze of ooze, then you're good.
Do they actually do, like, chocolate-covered palmetto bugs? Like, is that a thing? Because I know they do chocolate-covered crickets.
Crickets and grasshoppers. Bees.
Oh, wow.
And you can do maggots and
yeah,
stuff like that. Yep. They're high protein.
Like mealworms. Actually, I did see that there was this big kind of, like people are trying to get more into having people eat insects as a form of protein. But I saw this cooking show once where it was like bizarre foods from other countries. And this, it was, I can't remember what country it was. I want to say it was a part of Africa or South America or something. I don't know. But there was this salad they made where there were these ants, and they would put the ants in like cold water or, you know, like they would do something to the ants to where they wouldn't die, but basically they'd kind of shut down, like go into almost like a state of a deep sleep. And then they mix them in with the salad. And when they mix them in with the salad, they'd start to wake up, so that you'd be eating the salad with the ants crawling through it.
Oh, yeah. I like my food dead, not living.
That's exactly how I like my men.
Okay.
All right. Let's go ahead and get this ball rolling. And up first, we have Don't Quit by Eminem Fan 25. And go ahead and give that a read, Rex.
Don't Quit by Eminem Fan 25. You're looking down from up above. I hope I made you proud, despite the fact that I'm strong-willed, join in the crowd. But I have something to confess. So let me cast my net and bring to surface here and now my deep and dark regret. I knew your time was getting close. It had been for some years. We heard you say you want to die and saw you shed your tears. You were inside the hospital. They lost you once or twice. And whether you would make it through was just a roll of the dice. Somebody said that I should go and say one last goodbye. I planned on going that next day before you got to fly. When morning came, I grabbed my phone and saw I had a text, but there was no way to prepare for what would happen next. I opened up my messages. The text just read, "He's passed." The floodgates opened from my eyes, and tears came hard and fast. The memories came rushing in. For the past few months or so, your face is in my brain. I have not written for some time, if I'm to be quite blunt. I guess I had to just sit back and think of what you'd want. You always loved to hear my work and told me work for it. It would not honor you at all. Just give and quit, give up and quit. Despite the tears that still won't stop because regret is strong, I must get up and try again. I'm sorry, I was wrong. As far as grandpas are concerned, you were the best around. I swear to God I'll make you proud. Until I'm in the ground. End poem.
Great read, Rex. Wow. I have to say, first of all, Eminem Fan, he always has just a wonderful rhyme and flow. And, you know, I like the personal note, and I'm assuming this is true. And, you know, I'm sorry for his loss. It's difficult. Like when my grandfather died, I was vacationing in Chicago, and he had a brain aneurysm, and he was already in a coma, and I didn't get back in time, and you know, so I understand this, like what it's like not to get back in time, not to have that final goodbye, and you know, people will say things like, you know, now you can remember him as he was, you know, but, you know, it's still difficult because even though you're the only one saying the goodbye and the other person maybe isn't able to reciprocate it, it still feels like being able to have some finality, you know, in the grieving process, in the start of the grieving process. But, you know, as a poem, it flows wonderfully. I like the rhyme pattern he chose to use. Some of my particularly favorite lines where somebody said that I should go and read One Last Goodbye. I planned on going that next day before you got to fly. And then the memories came rushing in, and I felt so much pain. For the past few months or so, your face is in my brain. Sometimes it's really hard to let go. And, you know, but I think the most touching, I think, for me has to be the you always loved to hear my work and told me to work for it. It would not honor you at all to give up and quit. I think those are wonderful lines. I think when you have had someone in your life that supports you in a dream, and when they pass, you shouldn't give up on that dream, because, you know, it would be a way of honoring them. And it's beautifully written and very well done. Did you drop Rex? Have I been talking to myself? Well, shit. Hello? Rex? Okay. Rex, I can't hear you. So do you want to hang up and I'll call you back in? Hey, Victoria, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Sorry that Rex has disappeared.
No problem. I don't know why I'm not hearing Rex.
I can't hear him either, if it's any consolation.
You know what? Okay, well, he can't hear us, so I'm going to hang up on him. Then I'm going to put up the next poem, which will be a SoundCloud. And
okay.
Then
would you
I'm
mind
going
if I
to go
commented?
Into the green room and oh, yes, go
would
ahead.
Would you mind if I comment on this piece first?
I would be actually very happy if you would do that. Thank you.
Okay. So Rex goes, I've been talking to my bloody self for 10 minutes. Okay. So like you were saying, Pam, this piece really does hit hard. And I think at least once in our life, we've lost someone unexpectedly. And as you were speaking of your loss, it really reminded me of when actually my grandmother passed. I only knew one of my grandmas. The other one died before I was even a twinkle in my father's eye. But the grandma that did pass had been fighting stage 4 lung cancer. And her whole thing was she wasn't going to do chemo. She wasn't going to do anything besides some radiation from meds that were in her brain. And that's just how she wanted to live. She wanted to die without losing herself. So that was kind of her prayer, was that if she was going to go, that it went before she lost her mind. And I very distinctly remember the night before I had called my mom because she had gone up to be with my grandma. And mom was just talking about how grandma was having a good night for once. And there was just kind of that feeling of something's not right. I mean, because when you're in those final stages of cancer and you're headed towards death, and it's inevitable, I mean, she wasn't being treated, we knew it was going to happen. You know, to suddenly have a good night was just kind of bizarre. And I remember going to bed just thinking something's not right, and then waking up that next day, and I was in college, so waking up that next day and having that text of grandma passed away last night, it was hard and it hurt. And this piece really, really reminds me of that. It reminds me of how when someone that we love and that we care for passes, it causes this reconciliation of our life with them, without them, and how to honor them. And I truly feel like this piece really captured that. You know, there's kind of that heartache, the pain, and bits you can almost feel anger because there's that desire to give up and quit. There's that not knowing how to honor them, and the struggle of finally writing a piece in hopes that it does some semblance to make them proud. And I particularly loved that final stanza, the idea that as far as grandpas are concerned, you were the best around. I swear to God, I'll make you proud until I'm in the ground. Because there is that desire to still make them proud, to honor them, each of our actions and our words and all the things that they loved about us. I mean, my grandpa loved to hear his grandbabies sing. And so even though I am by far no professional singer, I always think of him whenever I get the opportunity to sing. And even Elva, who is my next door neighbor, who is like my mother, she passed when I was, gosh, I was going into eighth grade. So that had to be like 13. But she passed when I was 13 and thereabouts. And, you know, she's the one who got me into music. She's the one who got me playing the violin. And so every time I play the violin or write a piece of poetry, there's always kind of that reminder of her, because it's that opportunity to reconnect with the memory and what made her proud, to hopefully make her proud of me. And so I think this piece was so particularly strong because it feels like coming out of grief, finding that first piece that you can actually write to honor them. And they definitely did their grandpa justice in it. So marvelous piece, beautiful rhyme and flow.
I should totally agree. And I remember when my great grandmother passed away, and she was a woman who actually kind of made me nervous. The women on my dad's side of the family have this particular kind of personality where they're very formative. Like when you're a woman who raises five children during the Depression, you become kind of a badass. Like very, you know what I mean? Like kind of stern. But I remember the day before she was in the nursing home, and in her end days she had really bad Alzheimer's, you know, and so she changed that way too. Like she had become a different person, a kind of a quieter person. And we went to visit her, and I did something so like out of character for me. It's I leaned forward and I kissed her on the forehead, and she smiled, and then she died the next day.
And,
you know, I just always felt like it was, that kiss was that goodbye. But I really like how, what I like about poems like this is because listening to you, you know, I got to hear you talk about yourself. It's the kind of poem that inspires people to talk personally. But I'm sorry, I would like to say welcome back to the host of the show. welcome back, Rex. You missed my really awesome comment, by the way.
You did. It was a super awesome comment.
Without an inkling of whether anybody was there, only to find out, everybody was there.
Everybody but you.
Well, funny thing was, there was a slight pause, I was commenting because it was only the two of us, so I was like, okay, he obviously just wants me to start commenting. So I did. I commented for a couple minutes, and then it was silent. I thought, okay, that couldn't have been that bad of a comment that Rex is just sitting there.
I thought you had actually left the phone for a minute. Oh, okay. Since you're not there, I guess I'll have to pick up the pace and hold it myself. So I made a comment, and then there was some oddball rhyme in there at the back end because I had finished my comment. And I didn't think I was even there no more. And apparently, I was still on the phone.
You were. Yes.
Oh, no.
Until I hung up on you, you were. But
I'd have hung up after that that oddball thing at the end anyway. Then I finally said, oh, hey, I can hear you, Pam. But I think Rex dropped. You know, I was there somewhere in ether.
No, you were there, but we couldn't hear you. Like, if you were saying anything... We cannot hear you.
My phone is still going, kicking off the sessions. Yo, you're still alive in there. Okay.
Oh, too funny.
Like midnight in the garden of good and evil.
Well, did you, I'm assuming, Victoria, you heard me make my comment, right?
I did.
And neither of us heard Rex make his comment. So, Rex, did you want to remake
it? So my vote is to make him re-comment.
Absolutely. let's start banging on our windows, or not our windows, our kitchen counters going, comment.
Yes.
Well, it opened up with that, besides the thought, don't quit. And then the opening line was, you're looking down from up above. So already you're in that modus thought of, all right, you know where this is going, but you don't know who, what, where, when, or why. And then you have to wait for the bottom end to find out that it's grandpa. So everything else in between could be associated with a number of venues or people. And the offering was disease-wise isn't put in here either. That's a good thing because you don't have to go that far into it just to offer up the thought from the heart as far as the person you're trying to give your thoughts to. And that's what this is, because even though you were prepared to go because there was that thought that he already had passed once or twice before coming back. And maybe that was the thought of, all right, there's still a little bit of time. I can go see him before he does. There's that moment of clarity when, all right, it is time to actually make that trip, get down there, and spend a little time before it happens. And then that happens, and then that doesn't happen because you get the message the next day, and it already passed. And the thought is, from there on in, everything else is difficult, and the push was you shut down because you didn't get to offer up those last little tidbits, maybe offer up a new piece for him to listen to and comment on, or just ask a couple of questions as to what do you think, and get a couple of tidbits of wisdom on the way, on the back end. Didn't get that. So the thought with that, with the back end of this is, the pain overwhelmingly hits hard, and you shut down physically because you feel a little bit of guilt, maybe, because you weren't there to say goodbye, and that was what you wanted to do. And all of a sudden, a little bit of clarity comes afterwards. You get a little time to think about it, and now the idea is out. He says, don't quit. I can't do that. That would be dishonorable. That would... not leave a nice bit of legacy for the guy who actually gave me props and a little bit of encouragement along this path, and saying, what was that? He offered up work for it. So from that point, he honors up the sword with, it would not honor you at all to just give up and quit. And then the last few stanzas, because regret is strong, I must get up and try again. I'm sorry, I was wrong. There is that notice of a little bit of regret, yes, but the thought of giving up at that point in time is also naturally human. But it, like it says, it doesn't honor Grandpa. So the back end, the last answer, as far as Grandpas are concerned, you were the best around. I'll swear to God I'll make you proud and tell him in the ground. So there's that note of continuance. You gave me something, now I'm giving back to you on another level going forward, and I'll be, I'll try to be that to whoever else past me comes forward as you were to me going forward. Continuation, pay it forward.
I like that. I like that you brought up the kind of the pay it forward thing and the idea of learning from the people in our lives who treated us right, that whatever they were to us, we should be to future generations. And you're right, during a time like that.
That's the best thing you can do once you get past the mold.
Yep. Yeah, well, but the grieving process is difficult, and it's different for everybody, you know. And
I never knew my grandfather, so.
Your grandfather live in England or something like that, or?
Yeah, all of them did, but I never really knew them. Everybody passed when I was young.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was. Obviously, as you know, very fortunate with my grandfather, a good man who loved to read, had a drinking problem, but, you know, we all have our flaws, and, that happens. What's that?
Damn, Germans bringing their beer over here.
The German side of our my family, the last name, Schaefer, means shepherds. And I was over in Germany on a class trip. And
shepherding
yeah,
the hawk.
Yep, exactly. Sheep herders, shepherds. And so I was over in Germany on a class trip, and we were at a museum. And I didn't see it, but one of my friends with me pointed at this painting of this woman and said, and it was like a regal-looking woman, like very rich-looking, and said, "She looks like you, Pam." And I said, "Oh, well, she couldn't be related to me because all my ancestors were German shepherds."
Oh, God. Well, I think most of mine were pretty much fodder for World War One and World War Two.
I have no doubt they fought very bravely. All right. Well, we will go ahead.
Did we lose Victoria?
She just said no. She said in the room, "Be right back." I'm guessing because it's still fairly early for her. And after spending 8 hours on the phone with her yesterday, she deals a whole lot with those little ones. Oh, my goodness. One of them got mad because she shut the office door and was just, like, kicking the door. It sounded like it was, oh, my gosh, wow. I tell you. But
Mom.
That was pretty much it, plus the really loud banging. But, yes, she probably had to step away for a little one. Yeah. Well, I guess I shouldn't put up her poem then. All right, let me go grab another one because I was going to put hers up next, but that would not be a good idea. We'll go ahead and put up Diane D., who made a SoundCloud. So I'm really glad Diane's been making sound clouds. And, all right, "Time is a Risk Taken" by Diane D. And let me find that. Here we go.
"Time is a Risk Taken" by Diane D. Fly to a land beyond daydreams, where loyal blue waters cleanse, when dipping your toe in the ocean was free, and wings were not just for angels. Breathe in the salt of the earth, taste the nectar of velour vitality. The stairs you took up will take you back down. Be vibrant as sun calls the moon. Crimson and sable are footprints you left behind in the white sand. They stop at water's edge, listening to breaking waves, to sway to the beat of buoyancy. The first step that you took today, a journey of 1,000 breaths. Like a flickering candle, life swirls and bounces, and you are a passenger by will. To swim in waveless wave pools, risk without risk is not called risk. How can you get up if you never fall down? Reach for roses despite the thorns. As black is as colorless as white, fireflies can shine in the daylight. Light depends on the dark. Daylight rotates rhythmically. Jump knowing you can't unjump. And time is charitably unpredictable. Since the earth hums lullabies, time is the only constant, yet forever in motion. Risk not taken, time is all we gain. Scarlet sunrises are velvet moons to ones who never find yesterday. See the sun idle in time, the clock ticks no more. Nothing makes noise in a bubble. A kaleidoscope with glass shards is as unpredictable as raindrops. Just as whispers murmur, thunder rolls in billows. There is nothing as scary as nothing. end poem.
Great read, Diane, and thank you very much for SoundCloud. That was wonderful. And Pam, what'd you think?
I really like that. I think she has a wonderful reading voice. First of all, I like the title, Time is, a Risk. I wandered away. Time is a Risk Taken. And I like the whole idea to me of it being, about living life to the fullest. Breathe in the salt of the earth. Taste the nectar of the lower vitality. The stairs you took up will take you back down. Be vibrant as sun calls the moon. I like how there's this sense of where it says breathe in the salt of the earth. Like there's almost a sense in that stanza of a dreamlike quality of reaching for the heights of the heavens, but keeping your feet on the earth. And the first step that you took today, a journey of 1,000 breaths, like flickering candle, like swirls and bounces, and you are a passenger by will. I like the sense of movement in that and the sense of the choices you make carry you along. I really like the imagery in the end stanza with a kaleidoscope with glass shards and unpredictable as raindrops. And I like the idea of having raindrops be unpredictable. The interesting thing about if you use raindrops for an imagery and metaphor is that the way the raindrop is shaped, the way a raindrop falls, has absolutely nothing to do with itself, as far as I know. I shouldn't say that for sure, but most of the time it's the wind. The wind blows the raindrops. It carries the raindrops. So you think about it, oftentimes it can feel like we're that raindrop just going along for the ride. Time is the only constant, yet forever in motion. Risks not taken, time is all we gain. It's because what I like about that stands is the idea that it says that time passes for all of us. And no matter what, you're going to get to the end of your life. You're going to be on your deathbed. You're going to have that final moment of physically living, and you're going to be looking back. And are you going to be looking back at a life that you felt was fulfilling, that you felt you accomplished everything or tried to accomplish everything you wanted? I think it's wonderful use of imagery and a powerful statement on living life to the fullest, the time that you have. So excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said. Yeah, the whole thing is about movement, and because you're looking at a clock and watching it tick away. Yeah, that is the movement of everything. Even though we sit in a world that rotates at 12,000 miles an hour, we don't feel that movement because of the balance and the way things are set. But there was one piece in there. Risk without risk is not called risk. If you want a sedentary life with a sense of ease, that's fine. But then again, not living either. If there's a thought to losing something to gain something, then that is a risk. And you weigh those risks sometimes. You're a little more foolhardy in those risks. Why? Because you don't think about death and the angle of nothing. You think of that which you can do now because, hey, it might be offhanded, it might be a little stupid, it might be childish, but you're willing to offer up yourself in that moment because you find a little bit of fun within it. And that's part of this, as black, as colorless, as white, fireflies can shine in the daylight. And that's a nice different notation to looking at things. Jump, you should know you can't unjump. That's not a something in the lexicon that actually even makes sense. Hey, if you don't bother picking a rose and you're worried about the thorns, then you won't pick the rose, the soft beauty that lies within it. And you won't ever make those first or last steps beyond the thought if you're not willing to take that chance to begin with. And that bites on the notion of there is nothing as scary as nothing. That comes at the end of the day. You know, that'll eventually be there, but why spend some time on that note when you don't ever know when that moment's coming, so why bother with the thought of spending so much time alluding and deluding oneself to that note?
Absolutely. That was well said there. And welcome back, Victoria.
Thank you. We, Pam
Hello,
knows the ordeal of the dishwasher. But we finally...
Yeah.
So
the dishwasher...
So our dishwasher broke last week, and we bought a new dishwasher, and it threw a manufacturer's error. So all weekend, I haven't had a dishwasher. Poor Pam had to listen to me do the dishes, which is apparently a very terrifying thing to do. And called the manufacturer today. They wouldn't be able to get a technician out for a week to 2 weeks. So we ended up returning that dishwasher and found a new dishwasher, and we're finally getting it in the house. The hub needed a little assistance holding the dishwasher up while he tinkered down below the dishwasher. So I apologize for stepping away. I'm finally getting my fucking dishwasher, and I'm so excited.
Oh, that is exciting.
So it's picked up and it's ready to go.
Yes. So I won't have to hand wash the dishes anymore. I'm stupidly excited.
Awesome. Yeah. No, I don't know. It didn't even sound like she was washing dishes. I don't know what it sounded like, but I was pretty sure somebody was getting murdered.
Nothing like pots and pans banging around in a stainless steel sink.
Well, the problem is I have a really big sink, and then I have a smaller sink off to the side. So whenever you fill it up, it just sounds like this plopping water kind of stuff. So I do understand the horrors of it. So.
Well, I like those. That's the pre-wash and the rinse cycle.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
But if I might still comment on this piece, and even listening to Rex's comment, because unfortunately I missed yours, Pam, I would agree. This poem in the simplicity speaks to the saying, you miss 100% of the chances that you do not take. And what I appreciate about it so much is that Diane actually challenges us to think of the things that actually terrify us. If we try and understand infinity, it's a concept that while we can understand it, it's hard to fully wrap our mind around the whole concept of these numbers that continue to go, of vastness that continue to go. Space has an edge, and they know that beyond it, there is nothing. So trying to understand what nothing truly is a mind-blowing thought. And even the idea of black, which is the absence of all color. And that one particularly stuck with me because I remember as a child, I would dabble with painting. I suck at it, but I dabbled with it nonetheless. And I remembered that I didn't have black one time, and I mixed all the colors together in an attempt to create black. And the closest I could get was dark brown. And so when you start to think of what it takes to create black, again, it's kind of that mind-blowing thing that if you mix all the colors together, it's going to be very hard for you to get true black. And so I appreciate this. I appreciate this poem because it does challenge us to remember that there are so many things that we can't comprehend, and there are so many avenues and so many branches to the choices that we make, and yet we are going to miss the beauty of life if we never take them. That time in itself is a risk taken because, and this is the accounting thing, time value of money. You know, if you put money in a bank account and you let it sit there from when your kid's five, the interest is going to accumulate on it to the extent that the money grows much faster than if you stuck the money in there when they're 15 thinking, oh, well, I'll just catch up. You have this time value of money. And so in this way, I too am thinking of the time value of the decisions that we make. Imagine, and I actually did this with my degree. I started my degree in music. I did 3 years. I was in my senior year of college when I switched from music to business, which, as you can imagine, they have a ton of the extracurriculars and whatnot in common, like so many, not. But because of that, I spent an extra 3 years in college to become the accountant that I am today. And yet I could have been out of school 3 years sooner, 2 years sooner, creating and building my career and doing things to progress my life. But instead, because of the decisions that I made when I was 18, it affected my life in my 20s. It's that time value of risk. And so I appreciate that because it makes us stop and it makes us think and it makes us understand the true consequence of a decision, if you will. Because a decision, the etymology of that word, is that you are cutting off the path for the other choices that you might make. You are choosing one and you're moving forward with that. And that too is going to branch off. But perhaps that branch isn't as fruitful as some of the other decisions you made, or maybe it's just a late bloomer, but it is a risk, and decisions are what makes time that risk. So I hope that made sense, but it's a phenomenal poem, and it's just, I love the way it makes me think.
Well, I like that thought with infinity, because if you look at how the sun works, it sits 93 million miles from us, yet the light travel between those 93 million miles only takes 7.5 minutes to reach us when the Earth turns on its axis to the point where we get sunrise. And that is one of those infinitesimal notes we note logically and cognitively, but we don't pay any attention to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even thinking about that, you know, talking about time and the risk of time, there are stars. Another fun concept to think about. There are stars that we see in the night sky that are so far away from us that they no longer exist, but that event
Absolutely.
Hasn't had time to catch up with the Earth. So just because of the speed of light and all of that. And so I love that because it does kind of give that idea of how we interact with time. So yeah, thanks, Rex.
I like that note too, because that's different. Most people don't realize there's a ton of stuff out there that we still see that does not exist. And then you get those one brief burst of a supernova, which is a star exploding. Yeah, that happened 10, 15, 20,
yep.
100 million years ago. But we're
yeah.
only getting the light now.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I was in high school. I think I was going into my senior year. I'm pretty sure I was going into my senior year of high school. I went to this camp and it was out in the Sound up in Washington. But it was dark enough at night that you could see the stars really beautifully. And I actually remember seeing this vibrant green flash in the night sky. And it was a supernova that had finally reached the Earth. And it was very quick. It was a small little blip of this vibrant green. But it's something, it ever since then, it's made me kind of just reflect on that how long did it take for that light to get to us? So it's, I don't know, to me it's like a whole bunch of stuff that could inspire a lot of amazing poems. But anyways, I digress.
Well, how are you doing tonight?
All right,
me?
Victoria.
Oh.
We've got your poem
yes.
up. Go ahead, give it a
refresh,
please.
I gotta read.
Okay, so this one is called Tribulation. I've attempted to write this poem with the drying drops of ink from an empty tinted bottle. The essence of a muse left clinging to its walls as a reminder. Deep within my core, I feel a yearning that wishes to pour out, but the words and thoughts aren't there. How do I convey this beauty trapped in a fleshy cage, coiled within my mind? I have no new words, and all have been spoken and feel too cliche to move the heart to flutter. Draw tears from eyes reanimating my dying ink and providing purpose for a fading muse. I wish my words would make others marvel, inspire masses to think as I open my soul for public viewing. Instead, I lay my head upon an antique desk, antiquated tools to pen elegance, knowing that all that spills out is a puddling overflow of a drowning poet. End poem.
Great read, Victoria. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, bring it to the table. What do you think?
Oh, I really liked this. This is absolutely beautiful. First of all, yeah, I like the way that it flows down with the stanzas being centered. The essence of a muse left clinging to its walls as a reminder deep within my core. I find a yearning that wishes to pour out, but the words and thoughts aren't there. You know, I completely understand that. I think any poet understands that in a sense of, you know, wanting to write, but feeling like it's just not quite coming out. But it's also sometimes when you're a person that communicates in writing, like I don't know about other people, but me, I sometimes have trouble talking. Like I will be saying things and I'll be like, those sentences that I'm saying, those words are saying are not as elegant as they are in my head. You know, I like that. I also like how you say, you ask the question, how do I convey this beauty trapped in a fleshy cage coiled within my mind? And I have to say, I am very envious that you have an antique desk to lay your head upon. Laying your head upon an antique desk should be something that every poet should be able to do. It actually, this kind of reminds me of, somebody ran a contest with a Billy Connolly poem as a prompt, and the poem was The Window or something like it was, and it was, the whole poem was about how poets always need to have the window to gaze out at. It needs to be that moment where every poet in the middle of trying to process the writing of a poem needs to be able to stare out of a window. And I'm going to add on to that an antique desk. An antique desk and a window. But what's so beautiful about this write is the raw honesty of struggling to get the words out on paper. And then once you do get the words out of paper, we all have this wish. I wish my words would make others marvel, inspire masses to think as I open my soul for public viewing. It is such a difficult thing. It is so difficult to become a naked soul for public viewing and to know that, yeah, you're going to get praised, but you could very easily, and by you, I mean all of us, get what feels like rejection if people don't like your poetry or have something negative to say. Just absolutely, like I said, beautiful, it's raw, and it just captures that moment to express oneself. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was such a phenomenal comment, and I need a moment to process it because that was beautiful. Thank you.
I like Bobby jokes too. We are cups, constantly and quietly being filled. The trick is knowing how to tip oneself over and let the beautiful stuff out. Now that hits on with what you got. Everything walks in the thought of liquidity. Drying drops of ink, empty tinted bottle, the pour out, the fleshy cage, reanimation. Everything hits on liquidity, and that is what we are, liquidity, 90% water or water-based substances that make up the body. But it also points to the liquidity of mind. That thought, that question, how do I convey this beauty trapped in a fleshy cage coiled within my mind? But we forget that the mind often is that liquid flutter that we miss sometimes because even though all the words have been spoken, it's how we use those words. They don't have to be new. What new comes out of the thought is how the word is used in conveying your thoughts. That is the liquid motion of using a voice and the words that are available. Even when you make up new words like conflating two, super and real to make surreal, there is an essence, a flow there that works very well and still speaks to who and what we are. And I do like that thought on the back end the last two stanzas kind of hit on that sort of the finality in Bukowski. Instead, I lay my head upon an antique desk, antiquated tools with an elegance, knowing that all that spills out is a puddling overflow of a drowning poet. There is that essence that would be the kinder, more feminine side of Bukowski in that those last six lines.
That was such a stunning comment, Rex. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. But 'tis true.
And I'm so glad, and I just have to say, I'm so glad that you caught on to how I was trying to reference back to that liquidity, because we are, and the dehydration that we feel sometimes with writing and the overflowing of the muse and yet not having that avenue to get out, I would agree, it's a very real feeling. So I'm just really thankful that you caught on to that.
Well, absolutely. Sometimes we think too much instead of letting the voice flow.
Absolutely.
Yep, thinking should be saved for the editing process.
Oh, speaking of that, how much do you go with editing?
Me? It depends on the piece. I've had some where I heavily edit after the fact. This was one that I only made a few tweaks to, but otherwise, if I have a piece that just flows, then I tend not to want to touch it. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
So sometimes it's nice in its raw form. Sometimes it definitely needs a little help.
All right, Pam, where would you like to go next?
All right. Our next poem is Exploding by Seeley, and it goes like this. Did you know that grain silos used to explode? I didn't, at least not until this morning when I was in the passenger seat with my grandfather driving. Between the eggs Benedict we had for breakfast, the warm Colorado sun seeping through the windshield, I'd almost fallen completely asleep when his voice spilled into the air like this warm and runny yolk of a perfectly poached egg. But anyways, silos today are nitrogen-packed because you need oxygen for a fire. We need oxygen to breathe. What does that say about us? End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Victoria, what'd you think on this?
She says, be right back, being summoned again.
Okay, cool. Well, this kind of hits on the same thought of hers, liquidity, so to speak. And that opening line, did you know that grain silos used to explode? I didn't, at least not until this morning. When I was in the passenger seat with my grandfather drying. Yes, I do know that. Well, I did know for this that grain silos can't. The gas buildup is just a little notation of something, and all of a sudden, poof, everything bolts in a massive expiation of energy. But I like that second stanza. Between the eggs Benedict we had for breakfast, and then dropping the same thought in the next sentence. The warm Colorado sun seeping through the windshield. Boy, does that kind of hit on the notion of Eggs Benedict itself. And then right down the bottom end, again, warm and runny yolk of a perfectly poached egg. Again, pointing to that thought of Eggs Benedict and the Colorado sun. Well, I thought that was a great stanza right there. And then back to the nitrogen-packed silo and the offering up of oxygen for a fire, and then what we need, and hitting on the very same quote that Victoria took for hers, and I thought this was well played. All right, how about you?
Yeah, I have to agree, and you brought up some really good points about the way how if we hold things in, the wrong things in, we can end up exploring. At least, like, well, okay, that's what maybe, but like, what I kind of get from the poem is the whole idea of I like that she uses the science and nature to make the point of how holding those negative things in, holding anything in, can cause an almost emotional combustion, you know, and that we, in order to be healthy in mind and body, we need to learn how to, when and how to properly let things out and properly hold things in. I too was particularly fond of the imagery in the second stanza. I found this poem relatable because as someone who doesn't drive and is always in the passenger seat, it's so easy to just fall asleep and then all of a sudden realize that somebody is talking to you. But the imagery in the second stanza, now when I was a kid, we actually used to take trips during the summer to Colorado all the time because one of my dad's brothers and his family lived in Colorado. And so a beautiful area. We used to go, you know, visit the mountains, and it just absolutely a gorgeous area. So, and I did like when she described his voice, when his voice spilled into the air like the warm and runny yolk of a perfectly poached egg. And I have to say, you know, as far as eating and cooking goes, a perfectly cooked egg, any kind of style. I mean, you know, I don't know if everybody like, I like that runny yolk, you know, but it's got to be where the white is cooked, but not dry, and the yolk is runny. But I liked that. And, you know, to me, it's interesting to me that such a short poem that captures an almost like everyday moment can suddenly become like fuel for philosophical thought. And I like that she ends this on a question. And she gets us back. It's almost like she takes us on this short little detour and then says, oh, and by the way, here's my point. And it really drives it home. Because you need oxygen for a fire. We need oxygen to breathe. What does that say about us? You know, what does it say about how we are taking care of ourselves? So excellent, right, and very well done.
Because we don't equate the thought of that which we need to exist. We just believe in it instead of actually understanding how the machine works. I hit on us as like we're a naturally aspirated engine. You look in the car, you put gas in, and you need air mixed with the gas to make that operate and function on a level that works properly. Now, we work on the same thought, except our fuel is food. And if you take, just like with a car engine, if you take on the back end and throw a potato on the exhaust, you seriously congeal how that motor is going to run. Just like putting a mask on a human is offering up the same thought. We're no longer naturally aspirating, which means we're no longer functioning the way we're meant to function. And therein lies the issue of what happens. It breaks. It blows up. It dies.
I like that. I like that. We are meant to have that oxygen. We're meant to breathe. And we're meant, you know, I like that you compare the human body to the machine that needs the right kind of fuel. So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That is very true. Very true. We do need the right kind of fuel. And, all right. Ready for the next poem?
Shona.
All right. Well, welcome back, Victoria. And I think I'm actually going to give up Rex's turn to read. Do you have to go lift the dishwasher again?
No, I had to go make sure it was turned off so it didn't. He didn't get electrocuted when it was like plugged in and everything. So I guess that's slightly important.
Hey, just remember this. Once that's fully functional and operating, you'll save a whole lot more water in running the dishwasher than you will by washing the damn thing.
And
absolutely.
Time. But amen.
Plus you won't have dishpan handy.
I gave my girls a shower or a bath after washing the dishes, and I was like, there's no hot water. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's because I used it all washing the dishes. So next time I'll boil water.
Ooh.
We actually had a time period and way back in when I lived in the middle of the woods where we didn't have running water or electricity. And my mom would go down to the – my parents would go down to the river, bring up buckets of water, heat it up on the barrel stove, and then put it in – like, you know those old-fashioned movies you watch where they're, like, taking a bath in, like, a tin tub?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we had. We had one of those, oval-shaped tin tubs that would get filled up with buckets of hot water from – the river, except for if it was summer. If it was summer, my Ivory soap, my mom would hand us Ivory soap, say, strip down and go down to the lake and wash up.
Well, I my parents liked us kids to be well-rounded. And so when we went camping, that's what we'd have to do is we'd have to go down to the Ohanapakosh River, and which is glacier fed, so like the hottest it gets is 38 degrees, and get buckets of water, and we'd heat it over the fire, and that's how I had to wash dishes whenever we went camping as a kid. But they also loved to make us go river rafting for like at least a week to 2 week long adventure, which also required bathing with biodegradable soap in the river. So Pam, you are giving me flashbacks. I'm not sure greater times, but definitely flashbacks.
Well, yeah, we forget how things have progressed. We're so easy in that which we have that we know not the normality of what once was.
Absolutely.
And that we sit there and bitch about this, that, and the other thing of what's going on, not realizing, life used to be a whole lot more complicated while you're sitting in your little easy chair bitching about not having this. You know what? Try going out there, actually having to go down to that river and a washboard, and then find a place to hang your clothes. Go out, try and see if you can hunt down an animal or something for food to eat. Life has gotten way too easy for a lot of people without thought.
And nowadays we complain if our internet is too slow.
True fact.
I mean, true fact.
Boy, that's a conundrum.
Right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and bring us to the next poem because we've still got quite a few rights.
All right.
All right. So the next three rights are actually from the 7-9 episode of Into the Darkness. So not the serial killer one because we're saving those carryovers for a part two show. It was carryovers from the 2 weeks before that, or whatever. You know what I mean. And up next is Empty Boots by Paul Brott. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
I like that picture. Empty Boots by Paul Brott. Perched the top boots, eyeing his prey, return to the spot day after day. Those crawling crustaceans, a beach infestation, pecking through shells, finding food every day. Military boots left stranded on shore, begs one to wonder, are there more? A soldier once adorned this footwear. This crow is hungry, he does not care. Crawling closer towards the vulture, this motionless crow, the crab of sculpture, swooning in, crow snagged this critter, leaving boots of wartime litter. And poet. A nice different thought. All right, Victoria, what'd you get? What'd you think?
So this really reminded me of the beaches of Normandy, actually. Kind of that idea of here are these things in the ocean or on the beach that really shouldn't be here. and they're being played out as if they're a normal part of life. You know, a crow has found its way to perch upon it, its eye incrustation. It's a very natural interaction between this bird and this critter, and yet, in the end, we are still left with that image of those boots, the reminder that they were not supposed to be there, the reminder that the one who wore them is no longer here, and that it was so chaotic and so, it was such a trying time and a busy time that no one had the time to go and retrieve the boots. No one cared to get the footwear because what really mattered needed to be carried away or decayed away before it could be. It really makes us, me at least, think back to that, to the beaches of Normandy, to what happened there, and to these lives whose footprints or boot prints may still be hidden there unfound because no one had the time. So it's actually fairly dark and macabre and yet calls us to remember. So, stunning, right?
Nice. I like that. Thank you. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really liked this. You know, when I ran the contest with this picture prompt, you know, when you run a single picture, you take this chance that you're going to get, like, cookie cutter right. But this was an 8-only contest, and it was certainly just not disappointing in any way. Everybody had a unique idea, a unique vision for this picture. Which what I like about this picture is it's dark, but there's almost I don't know if simplicity is the right word, but it's not a busy picture, so therefore you can fill it in with your imagination. And I liked this right in the idea of, as Victoria was talking about, it's talking about that everyday need of the animal, the interaction between the hunter and the hunted. You know, and like where he says, this crow is hungry. He does not care. Crawling close towards the vulture, this motionless crow to crab a sculpture, swooning and crow snagged the critter, leaving boots of wartime litter. It's interesting because if a person came across those boots, there'd be all kinds of questions in their mind. You know, where did these boots come from? Who did they belong to? You know, where is that person? What happened to them? And nature simply goes on. And I think this is the darkness in this is tempered. It's not like in your face, but by showing that the crow goes on with only caring about filling its stomach, and the crab goes on simply caring about hiding. It kind of works as a whole metaphor for the idea that, you know, no matter how horrible and sad and violent death is, life continues on. I think this is an excellent brevity and very well done.
Nice to see, Pam. Thank you. I too bit on that thought of the beaches at Normandy because it has that eerie glow about it. But also, it paints that because way back when you're on a sea voyage, 3-4 months at sea, because that was the time it took between land and shore, you didn't keep your dead for burial. You put them over the side in the sea. It's a reminder of that of things that even in death, all things are food to something else, whether it be the crow, the crab who strips down flesh off bone, or those little bits of algae that get to feed on the bone that lays beneath the water itself. We all feed something eventually, and that's just a reminder of that which we are. We are food for something else once we're gone.
I like
because
that, and absolutely we are.
Yeah, we forget that, even with the thought of how we adorn ourselves in death by emptying the body and filling it up with chemicals, and they still get fed upon eventually.
Oh, absolutely. Even if it's not the critters and the worms that we don't want to be fed upon is still going to be fed upon via bacteria and mold,
yes,
and all those things that still creep in the cloth of the casket. So I am going to have to apologize. I'm getting summoned away yet again, probably to load the dishwasher this time. Everybody cross your fingers and your toes. But I'm gonna hang out.
All
so
right.
I don't
well, next time you get summoned, just let him be electrocuted if he keeps interrupting.
Okay. Thank you guys for letting me hang out for a bit. I truly love you guys. Oh, go ahead.
Absolutely. Take care. Oh, what did you say, Rex?
All right. If he's electrocuted, then she's got to get rid of the body.
Well, that's true. You can call Rex for advice on how to get rid of a body. I hear him dragging them through the woods all the time. All right.
Sharp knife and always in the joints.
All right. Well, I guess when she stepped away, it will be now my turn to read. And up next is Blackened Souls by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Abandoned, alone, deserted, raven wanders, jet black eyes just stare, hollow heart fading, breathing in his bloodied hands, just pounding slowly, sharp piercing, barbed wire, tattoos caressing my chest. I stare reflecting, solitary tears rolling from traumatic eyes, lost in their own minds. Deep down, pure darkness in the depths of cruel silence, resides blackened souls and poem.
Great read, Pam. A different, very different take on the very same picture from the raven, then offering up the bloodied hands, offering a little bit more. But I like the thought with the sharp, piercing barbed wire, tattoos caressing my chest as they're reflecting. They're offering up the body in the moment without the body actually being in the shoes itself, just a thought beyond the picture. I like that. The darkness in this is very different from Betty, going actually full dark. She's not normally like this. Different. And it offers up that note that, hey, all things are as they are in the moment, and we should take note of it.
Absolutely. And you're right. This is different for her. She's usually got some sensuality thrown in. She went purely into the darkness with this. First of all, I have to say that this reminds me of a particular scene in one of my all-time favorite movies, Legends of the Fall. You ever see that movie, Rex?
No.
You absolutely must. You must see it. It's a powerful, moving, it's a long movie, but it's worth it. But there's this scene, and they're in World War I, and the youngest brother joined first, and the two oldest brothers joined basically to keep an eye on him, because he was the baby of the family, or protective of him. And there's this scene where, and obviously, you know, I'm giving a little bit away, but I think pretty much everybody except you has seen the movie, where the youngest brother is trapped in some barbed wire, and they're trying to get to him in time, and they don't. And he ends up getting shot while hanging on the barbed wire. And when they go back home, they have to deal with the survivor's guilt and with the PTSD. And this very much, I feel like that there's something in this that focuses on the psychological darkness of a soldier who's come back from war, of, you know, the whole idea of being almost like lost within oneself and not being able to tear oneself away from the darkness that's inside. And, I stare reflecting, solitary tears rolling from traumatic eyes, lost in their own minds. So when it says in their own minds, I feel like this isn't just talking about one person, it's talking about many people who have been traumatized. I think this is a powerful doc, right? And I noticed it got a front page pick, so congratulations on that, Betty, and very well done.
Walk on that thought, then you ought to see All Quiet on the Western Front, the original, not the remake.
I think I have those veneers.
There's one singular moment in that massive what is going on where the soldier looks and a butterfly enters the realm and offers up that sense of beauty within the mass horror that surrounds.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm definitely going to have to rewatch that if I have, or watch it if I haven't seen it. It sounds,
heard
of the movie.
Before that happened, the war was fought basically hand-to-hand. The horrors of what technology brought to World War One was more than what most people could bear mentally, because they were physically and mentally prepared over the years, because everything was basically hand-to-hand. You fought that way. World War One brought so much more. And the funny part is, I think it was one Christmas saunter, little ceasefire later in the war, that a British soldier came across a young Hitler on the battlefield and let him go back to his troop rather than execute him on the spot. That would have saved us the Second World War.
Wow. Wow. Isn't it odd how just life has those moments where something had gone just slightly different? But, yeah, I actually have read before about those ceasefires. Like, there was was it during World War One, I think? There was a ceasefire during Christmas time.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember somebody ran a contest and that I wrote a poem for that.
Everybody saw the ceasefire. They were celebrating and sharing across the no man's land. You could hear them, everybody singing, praising, wishing Merry Christmas and all that. But right afterwards, that didn't last very long because of the leaders. But the men on the field understood that touch of camaraderie and sharing in the moment, that which they all understood, which was Christmas holiday spirit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Now, this will be the next one up. Will, I believe, be our last, our last carryover from the 7-9 Into the Darkness. And it is The Last Laugh on Me by Nizar Solomon. And Rex, go ahead.
The Last Laugh on Me. Again, that nice picture. Nizar Suleiman. Craw, blackbird, I hear you gloat. The last laugh is on me, you quote. My love drowned me, and now I float in muddy ashes and bloody bloat. Sing, blackbird, each note by note, my sad song of love gone, I wrote, breath by breath from a dying throat. In a last breath, I ended my end note. Feast, blackbird, on love scapegoat, on this love a corpse cast your vote, and grin laughing under your coat, a fool fallen to cruel love cutthroat. For life but wide-angle view of butte, as I was a free bird of sky-high afloat, and love was my fall to a mating throat with the grim reaper on a ferry boat, with the blackbird on his sickle gloat, had the last laugh on me, end quote. That was different. All right, Pam.
I like this. It had a nice rhyme and flow. I liked how it was almost continuously end rhyme. The only difference is he put, is that supposed to be butte? I think. View of butte. So that's a kind of an off rhyme there, but that, you know, on a whole, you know, the end rhyme with the same sound of the O was well carried out. I like how this focuses more on, like, an individual of lost love. Like, it focuses more on the emotional darkness of losing love. And I really like Feast Blackbird on Love Scapegoat, on This Lover Corpse Cast Your Gold, and Grin Laughing Under Your Coat, A Fool Falling, The Cruel Love Cutthroat. And the whole idea of it almost being like a metaphor, like a blackbird being a metaphor for that love that comes along and, you know, makes a fool of you, or what you thought was love comes along and makes a fool of you when your heart is broken. I really thought this was nicely emotive and written all the way through. I also like that he mentions the Grim Reaper on a ferry boat. Like, he delves into kind of the idea of the fairy and the mythology. With the blackbird on his sickle gloat, had the last laugh on me, end quote. The blackbirds and ravens are oftentimes used in mythology, so I think it works really well to use them as a metaphor, almost as if of a messenger passing along the news of love or life coming to an end. So, excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, he did roll this with a full singular end rhyme. I did like that the thought up top. Blackbird, I hear you gloat. There is that notation of understanding where the moment's going and finishing out that first stanza with a bloody bloat. I like the thought with that mating trote, which is a cry in the wild to others to come, usually a mating call for rutting. And I think with the use of butte, I think he might have gone, if he'd gone with the B-E-A-U, and then offered up the separation with the line mark, and offered up the T as an adjunct. You could have gone right there and kept it as the life, but wide angle view of boat, because B E A U would have offered up bow, that thought of being the lover in the moment, and that was where that the trope fits in, and where the Grim Reaper on a ferry boat kind of floats that same thought going down, because the this is about in the moment of that which the blackbird, the raven, does come calling, because he's feeding on that which is left. But you hit that second stanza, Feast Blackbird on Love Scapegoat. So, there is a sort of not just offering up the love as a scapegoat, but the full body as that which gets fed upon.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. And all right, that's it for Into the Darkness. And now we are moving on to Art of Seduction. You can't get much more of a change than that. So go ahead and move into the sauciness. All right. And did I get a poem posted? Up first, or up next, is Anatomy of Love by Perfect Sunset. And she was actually, I gave her the gold for this particular contest. And if I remember right, this was Neruda. Yes, it was the one with the Neruda as prompts. All right, milky as soft bones of clouds is your flesh against mine, paled moon, glistening frothy waves over my crisp copper chest like the skin of gold apples. Your eyes are topaz jewels, jawline oval as almonds, round circular breasts like two white roses, nipples pink, morganite sculpted from the geodes of earth, staring at my scarlet vessel eyes that bulge in your goddess presence. Your legs are smooth cream pillars leading up to a valley of warm, supple coral, such as with a cherry tree atop, and I shake the cherries, nimble as a fawn. Watch them fall to your navel bed, made from the purest of perlas del Arsenal. And I drink you like a porcelain cup of steeped floral oolong, also want this jasmine and really fragrance of you fluttering out from my flesh like all the flowers of Spain, Madrid, Calciola, de Viana, Pagios, Cordoba, and Palm.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Boy, this is a different role for your thoughts. Bones defiled with your flesh against mine. Pale moon glistening frothy waves over my crisp copper chest like the skin of gold apples. It's such a nice contrast in that vision right there. Topaz jewels, jawline oval as almond round circular breasts. Again, visual. Like two white roses, nipples pink morganite sculpted from the geodes of earth, staring up my scarlet vessel eyes that bulge in your goddess presence. Damn. There is some thought to visuality in that which is seen. But I do like, there's almost an adjunct of humor, a supple coral with a cherry tree atop, and I shake the cherries, nimble as a form, born, watch them fall to your navel, bed made to pierce the perlas del oceano, offering up the salt and the sweet. Very different.
Absolutely. And luxurious. Absolutely. I thought this was just absolutely beautiful. I feel like I should have had you read it, but we actually have quite a few male written poems from this. So, you know, but I like, of course, you can't help but think of the song, Really Like Your Peaches Wanna Shake Your Tree. And I think to me that's part of where the humor comes in is that it's that whole idea. But, you know, to me, I really felt like she captured the essence of Neruda's poem of the topic, because this was a contest ran for when The Art of Seduction was on National Naked Day, and I had posted as prompts two poems that were about appreciating a lover's nude body, appreciating the beautiness of the human form. And I feel like through her imagery, through her metaphors, she offers us up nature as a palette for a woman's body and the different shapes, the different textures, the different kind of sense of movement. I really like her use of colors and the use of fragrance and nimble as fawn, and I shake the cherries nimble as a fawn, watch them fall to your navel bed, made from purest of pearls, del arsenio. There's something about, like, the whole idea of this isn't just appreciating the physical form, but it's appreciating the way a lover's body moves when you touch it. At least to me, that's kind of what I get from it. And I like that she threw the Spanish in there. I wish I had a better accent for Spanish, but, it doesn't quite work. But for me, it's beautifully written and, truly... truly worthy of a gold. And all right, and did I grab the next poem? That is a good question. Yes, I did. All right. Up next, we have Fairies Abide by Thomas B. And go ahead, Rex.
Okay. Fairies Abide by Thomas B. Before dawn crawls over the horizon, when the mists are curtains, trees, thunder, and shadow, you slip through the race of dew, left silver footprint on the grass, slid into the chair next to mine on the porch, leaned over and kissed and traced my ear with tongue, whispering argent secrets deposited in my dreams. A shiver captured you. So So cat-like, you possessed my lap and let me wrap my arms about you. Shemus soaked the transparency. I could watch the shivers chase themselves. I breathed in the rain, enhanced lavender, thyme, scents that floated to the surface of your skin. A hint of sage stood behind, reminding me heaven comes with its own memories of past lifetimes. Tresses caress as you burrow with your head against my neck as if trying to wrap me about you. I have long understood the magic view and the wonder that calls out full of promise and teases my hope as the fall blossoms of your glee chases everything from my veranda except the sunshine that brings you great joy. Raindrops shine on your skin, and as the sun creates rainbows in the mist before stealing back these curtains of water, I know my day has been stolen. I lift a coffee cup, and you steal a sip. Tell me how smooth and delicious it is first thing in the morning. Delighted and cautious, I wonder at mysteries, magic, what you might have planned and its cost. Light dances in your hair, all resistance gone, and home. All right, what'd you think?
Well, first of all, I tell you, Rex, there are moments when you're reading a poem that I'm sighing on the inside because you are just sounding so damn good. But, you know, I liked this. What I liked about this was there wasn't a lot of, like, you know, there wasn't nakedness necessarily. There wasn't, you know, they weren't necessarily in the act of making love. But to me, it beautifully captured the delight of intimacy. I do have to say it has to be true love if you're willing to share your coffee. But what I like is that you feel like you're allowed a glimpse of somebody's personal life, of them sitting on the veranda, sipping their cup of coffee, and their significant other, their lover, the person who means something comes to them and sits on their lap. And there's very something very physically, you know, intimate about that moment where the hair is brushing, you know, they're leaned close to each other. Even taking a sip from the coffee cup, I feel has a wonderfully delicate and yet suggestive metaphorical quality. There's just, you know, the whole idea of the oral fixation of sharing that intimate sip together. I really thought this was just a beautiful, beautiful write and very well done.
Funny thing, I went literally with this. Because it hits on those, that notion of, a wistful thought and dream in the moment, something that previously you've experienced. But it also walks on the thought of the cat itself. Let's see. You slipped through the race of dew, left still with footprints on the grass, slid in the chair next to mine on the porch, leaned over, kissed, traced my inward tongue, whispering secret angels, deposits of my dreams. There's that notation of thought. And then Shiva caps you so cat-like, you possess my lap, and let me wrap my arms about you. There's that note of a cat wanting something in the moment. And the thought with the tongue with the ear, that little notation from the cat itself walks well. The trace of lavender thyme, sensible in the surface, that hits on the notion of the cat walking through the garden, picking out the notation from the flowers and the surrounding climb on the walk through. The burrow head against the neck, again, that thought with the cat. It works that well, but it also hits on a note. It could just very well been a thought of a woman that had long passed into memory, so to speak.
I like that. I wouldn't have thought it to be actually a literal cat. I could see it going that way. It kind of works well on a duality level, but I like that you mentioned the idea that it's something perhaps that isn't actually happening in the moment, but rather almost like a daydream.
Well, you got the notes for the thoughts about the cat are perfect, because a cat coming in like that is, you get those little notations, the footprints in the grass, the aromas of the fur itself, the nuzzle up against the neck, all that kind of points on those things a cat coming in would do, because it's looking at the moment. Even that little thought with the sip of coffee, it's on home. Cat's a little thirsty. Dips his face in the mug and takes a little sip.
That is true. I'm still not going in that direction myself. I still prefer to think of it as an intimate moment shared between two people that care about each other.
The other end. That woman's no longer there. The cat is the representation in the moment, the thought, the image, the view.
The cat is the only pussy he's getting at this time. All right.
Literally, figuratively, yes.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Okay. we'll move along. And up next is Shades of Passion Green by Angel Seeker. And it goes like this. When your touch grazes my slender trunk, limbs burst forth, emerald leaves dream their way into being, trembling as they grow into summer shades, chartreuse, shamrock, and juniper flush forth, lime dances at your pulsating grin. The hunter in you slips your firm lips along my chin, your supple fingers inchworm through my hair, leaving moss and fern growing there. You circle my breasts, spouting bands of myrtle as malachite flashes in my verdant eyes. Time stands still as you delve and dab neon deep into my core. For long moments, I am the Amazon and the first apple and maybe the snake, because you fill me with sage and juniper, an aura of karatoki flowing from my form. I burst into being at your virgin and cadmium, olive and pine intertwine, binding us in the flourishing forest that springs forth as we leach turquoise and jade into the lush land that camouflages our lust. Harlequin shades us in the viridian rainforest as we sing prosperous and aberrantine until the scent of mint fills the musky air as we drift off to the sound of crickets and sea lapping forever onto our shores. End poem.
Great read. I'm going to go with a pun to start with. Someone's got a very, very vivid voice. Or verdant voice. That was the word I was looking for. Chartreuse, shamrock, and juniper flush forth. Lime dance with your pulsating grin. There's a nice sort of heavy as the greenery. Shamrock, not used nearly often enough. Juniper, most people don't associate with green, but yes, juniper is very green. I like that. And even the sort of sprouting bands of myrtle and malachite. The myrtle offering up the green leaves in the moment. That's a nice touch there. Fern and moss. And I like the thought. Your supple fingers inchworm through my hair. That's a nice touch. And this next one, again, green. Time. For long moments, I am the Amazon and the first apple and maybe the snake. Because you fill me with sage and juniper and aurora of a kaitoke flowing from my form. Yeah. This is actually quite damn good.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this wasn't an easy contest to judge. What I particularly like about this is that, to be honest, while I really like the color green and you know, well, I should say some greens. Like, there are some really ugly greens, but then there's also some very beautiful and vibrant ones. Like, You know, I feel like Mother Nature really knew what she was doing when she made the majority of trees and leaves green and the grass green. She took all these different shades of green, which I would never have thought to do in essential light, and put emotion into them. You know, I like when somebody steps out of a box, like, and I'm not saying it's her box personally, but I feel sometimes as poets, we have a tendency to say, okay, these are the colors you associate with love, sex, and passion, you know, red for lips, for cherries, for the fire that burns within us, you know, but here she uses green, and green is a color that to me represents growth, that represents life, and like verdant is a wonderful example of a word, the color green that, you know, represents the new spring, and to me, I feel like every use of the color green that is being used as a symbol, a metaphor, as they are touching, it is almost the idea of a new awakening. So I really liked this. It's beautifully written and very well done. All right. And up next we have Neruda's Truth by Thomas Blacken. And go ahead, Rex.
As soon as it comes up.
Okay.
Neruda's Truth by Thomas Blacken. We are elastic forms of love against the grain. You, lovely bone, you are burdened of all the ancient artifice of leaf or skin and grass or clover. Melancholy is such a lovely name for you, for oxygen and for its blue flame, soft light, necessary elegant deep longing, lovely in your transparency, as the new marble moon at dawn, or the barren clay of Mars, the green lips of the blue spruce in spring. Our bodies clothe each other now and have shed our pretense for what we are now, clay on clay, where just an hour ago we were far removed and submerged in our stealth and covering to keep off the cold. I love your eyes. They are also the color of truth and sometimes of mystery. Naked, the bird of love spread wide its wing above chasms and valleys below. My body between the wings trembles with the breeze. I am the buffeted sails of the frigate, the fog and white sea clouds parting. The gull screams, I fall. Tell me, what beauty is there in death if I cannot live between her wings again? The bird of love is no phoenix at all, but fire. Fire is without clothing. Fire burns off all that is not truth, and out of the monumental smoke, I sally forth to heaven in that narrow funnel rising and the blessed eminence of her embrace. Melancholy, such a lovely name for so dark and beautiful an angel who is mourning and naked as fire. And boom.
Read there, Rex, and wow, I have to say that this is just absolutely beautiful. I think Thomas Blacken is just masterful at the imagery and metaphors. And actually, this one was also from page 6, so congratulations on that. I like how, I'm going to start at the end where he says, naked as fire. And I think that's so true because fire never tries to be what it isn't. It comes into existence and it is beautiful and it is destructive and it is and always will be fire that provides light, but at the same time completely consumes. I really especially like Naked, the bird of love, spread wide its wings above chasms and valleys below. My body between the wings trembles with the breeze. I am the buffeted sails of frigate, the fog and white sea clouds parting. The gull screams, I fall. That is just, to me, just beautiful and passionate imagery. And I also like melancholy is such a lovely name for you, for oxygen, for its blue flame, soft light. I like that he brings up the blue flame, the hottest flame, the flame that burns the longest. I just thought this was beautifully written and very well done. And, you know, of course, I'm looking forward to what you have to say.
I like the imagery in this, elastic forms against the green, leaf with skin, grass, and clover. Again, the green in there. And then he had on something else, green lips of the blue spruce in spring, a double thought, but actually blue spruce is very green with a hint of blue-green on the tips. It's a nice touch there. The clay on clay offers up that sort of molding and the birth of humanity out of clay, so to speak, breathe life, a clay to green. Now, the thought, naked, the bird of love spread wide its wing above casting valley below. My body between the wings trembles with the breeze. There's quite the offering of the legs being the wings, so to speak, and the thought of dissemination between two in the moment.
Absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
Get out of the feed box.
I have to agree. And let's see here. Up next,
I'm going to hurt you.
What's that? Who are you going to hurt? Oh, are you talking?
Damn cats. Move.
Oh, you know what it is? She has decided that she has not gotten enough attention. You have been on the phone for nearly 2 hours ignoring her, and shame on you.
Oh, no, they've been outside. Their fault. Not mine.
Oh, okay. Oh, so she just came back and said, okay. All right, so that poem actually got deleted, so I will go ahead and find another one. That's too bad, because that was a beautiful poem. But, you know, we all have our moments where we just decide that, well, I will go find something else. And so she just basically arrived home and said, okay, I'm home. You know, I'm going to now hop into your lap and sip from your coffee cup.
It's off.
All right. Then I will just go with this. All right. This is a romantic epitaph by Jim Bellamy. And it goes like this. This word in spinning no man may understand nor shape the sun ahead. For love that lives forever wearing shades of pain, woman knows her aim. Sightless as the moon, the winter is abroad. And the nova's ebb, as quiet as the mind, as to the void lost, like the son of a woman, as the suck of blood and the born ribbon round. For life, there is no death, and no place to earn. Neither might the dawn transgress to jurassity, when the birth is red and the coming is real. Let me lie emptied. Oh, rage against the light. Do not let the winter burn where rhyme cannot allow the summer's rays of endless yearning. Rage against the light. Do not let the winter's flame where time cannot allow the summer's way of rendered pain. The river in the heart is zeroed in on pleasure. No man can starve the day of life that quite fails to storm its heritage feather. This rhyming mountain holds the shiny brethren skied in the coils and the rivers of the pricked measure of measures and seasons in the mind, the crocodile and chrysalis. This rhythmic rose reveries and breaks along the stations of a line, underpenned in ovum as murmurous as spheres and headingly as molten as a siren in a shine that rampaged in laughing spires along a slit. Tremor of the Stobworth shimmers, Arctic zero. Rhyme, rhyme of summers and rhyme of herring widows through the plush of drummers' times hearing crown crescendos and gyring lunges for certain end, mammary and memory conspiring through the eyes. This world in spinning no man can understand, nor shape the sun ahead for love that gives forever. We're in glades of pain, children know their games. Sightless as sand dunes, the winter's abroad and the fever's age, as quiet as a mine when the earth is dead and the lightning spread, let love die emptied. Oh, and poem.
Right, right, Pam. This is the old world style and thought, a romantic epitaph. Yet it spins on it, that opening phrase kind of spins its head on its shoulder because of the offering in the, what was it, where the hell was it? No man may understand nor shape the sun ahead for love that lives forever. Where, in shades of pain, woman knows her aim. Sightless as the moon, the winter is abroad and the summer's and the nova's ebb, as quiet as the mind, as the void lost, as the son of woman. There's a note to birth in that, as well as not understanding the value and the pain that comes along with that birth, but also not understanding woman itself. And what else we got? Again, second one walks on to the voice of rhyme and the yearning in that note, still not understanding yet, understanding the summer's ways of rendered pain, because there is a note of longing in the yearn where you don't have that to actually express the poem, and that it's on that sort of the hero's feather in the last line. And again, last line number three, the tremor of the state which shimmers arctic zero. And I'm thinking that second to last line, that rampage of laughing spires along a slit, there might be a little double entendre thought to that one. But the crocodile,
the same thing.
There's a note to the chrysalis of rebirth, but the crocodile itself, might that be crocodile tears, or the fact that there is a bite that might come from that chrysalis. I don't know at the moment. Let's see, what else we got here? Number four, no man can understand nor shape the sun's ahead for love that gives forever. We're in graves of pain, children know their games. Again, that thought to rebirth. And then let love die emptied. I think the thought of someone sitting under a tree and pondering the thought of love's meaning along the lines of beauty that surrounds, and that's what's drawing upon. Yet still the non-understanding of that which is not there to begin with.
I like that. I think this is a beautiful and powerful write. Jim always does a phenomenal job with imagery and metaphors and thinking differently. And I have to say, it was just really wonderful listening to you delve into that write and go in depth in your comment. And I think you made a lot of good points. Also, I would like to mention, well, first of all, this was an excellent show, and thank you so much, Rex, for allowing us to your show for carryovers.
It was that late. I didn't realize it was 2:30 already. Crap.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun. And check out anybody, please make sure everybody check out Phil's contest and topic board for tonight's Twisted Tuesdays. She's got a lot of amazing art prompts featuring hourglasses with different scenes within them. So, great show, Rex. And anything you'd like to mention?
Let's see. Well, Bob Seger this Sunday, and I can't think of anything
awesome.
Else.
Awesome. That's going to be a rocking show. Very cool. All right. Well, have a good night, and I'll see y'all later.
All right. Good night.